By the way, I don't know if you noticed it, but Catherine's voice went up a pitch or two as she had that tarantula on her arm. You just notice it go up. I might do that too, who knows? Well, this morning we are continuing our series on fear, and this is the last week of that series, and this morning we're focusing on the fear that never ends, the stress, the anxiety that for some of us just doesn't seem to go away, but we always worry and worry and worry. So I'm reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 14, verses 25 through 27, and these are Jesus' words. I have said these things to you while I am still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. Years ago, when I was in college, a friend of mine, Ron Parker, and I went to on a backpack together, a five-day backpack in Yosemite National Park. And I think it was the second or third night, we were asleep in our tent when we were awakened at about 2 a.m. in the morning by a bear snorting. I have to tell you, there's nothing more scary than being woken up at 2 a.m. in the darkness, and it's because there is a bear outside your tent, and the only thing that is between you and that bear is a thin piece of nylon. Well, Ron immediately jumped out of his sleeping bag, unzipped the tent door, and ran out in his socks, not bothering to put on boots. I paused for a minute and quickly slipped on my boots, didn't lace them up, but put them on. And then I ran outside and we grabbed up pots and pans and we began to bang them together and make as much noise as we could, yelling at this bear. We then noticed the bear was about, 30 feet away behind a bush. And with a flashlight shining on it in the dark, I could tell it had a tag in its left ear, a yellow tag with a number on it, which meant this was a problem bear. After I discovered that, the bear charged us, and we ran. We ran quite a distance, about 100 yards or so, to another backpacker's camp. Found out when we arrived in that camp, they were up because the bear had hit them about an hour earlier. And they had put their food for the night up on the top of rock, figuring that the bear could not get to it, but the bear climbed up there and ate all of their food. So we stayed in their camp for about 10 minutes, got up courage, and then we decided we'd go back to our camp and see what happened. So carefully, we went back to our camp and found that, yes, the bear was still in our camp, about, 50 feet outside our camp. Seeing that the bear was a little ways out, then what we did is we quickly built up a fire where we'd had a fire earlier and built it up pretty large. And then we noticed that the bear had our food. There was a rope tied between two bags, and both bags were full of food. And what we had done is we had put this rope over a tree branch way up high, and had been counterbalanced with those two sacks, and we did that so the bear wouldn't get to our food. Well, we found out that the bear just climbed the tree and ripped the limb off the tree. Then the bear sunk teeth into one bag and walked off with that one bag quite a distance out of camp, but the other bag, dragging behind, got stuck on a bush. And so the bear just sat down where it was, opened up the bag, and began to eat. So as we're looking at this bear, we realize one bag of our food is not too far away, but only about 25 feet away from the bear. But we're in the middle of the wilderness. We need our food, so we drew straws. Ron lost. I gave him my very sharp knife. He crawled on the ground, and every time the bear would look up at him, he would freeze. And the bear would go back to eating. He'd take a few more steps, and he crawled all the way up to the bag. He cut the rope, and he brought that bag all the way back to the fire. And we were, great, we got some food. How much food do we have? We opened up the bag and found out that 75% of our food was in that bag, thank goodness. In counterbalancing, we'd put most of our gas canisters in the other bag, so we had enough to continue our trip. Well, we thought, how long will it be before the bear bites through one of our gas canisters? Won't that be fun? But bears are smarter than you think, and the bear didn't do that. Well, when the bear finished off the food in that bag, the bear then got up and came after the rest of the food. So the bear began to walk towards us, but this time we were ready. We had branches in the fire. We pulled the branches out. Each one of us had a branch, and it was really kind of a flaming torch now. And we held the fire towards the bear, and the bear immediately backed up about 10 feet and then laid back down. Then about a half hour later, the bear got up and decided to try it again. And we held out those burning branches again, and the bear went back and sat down. And that's when we heard some noise in a nearby tree. We shined a flashlight up to discover that the bear was in fact a mom, and she had two cubs, and they were up a tree. Now we knew we really had a problem. We had a standoff. The mother was not going to leave her cubs, and we were not going to leave our equipment. So every 30 minutes she tried to come at us. We held her back with fire, and it was a standoff until 6 o'clock in the morning. When the sun began to rise, there was just a little bit of glimmer of daylight so we could see our surroundings. And not even bothering to pack, we just simply gathered up tent and equipment in our arms. And we just gathered everything up and we walked away from camp this way. And we watched as the mother walked over to the tree and the cubs came down and they went off that way. The standoff was ended. I have to tell you, that's one of the scariest nights I've ever spent out backpacking. How do we handle fear and anxiety and worry and stress? I'm sure you know that all animals have a preservation instinct, an instinct that helps keep us safe from danger. And with many things, we just naturally know that's a dangerous thing. And I think this part of how we are created is a gift from God. There's danger, we know it, and so we take steps to protect ourselves. And we certainly know that our body physiologically prepares itself. We know that immediately and that night, Ron and I were both stressed. I mean, our heart rates were up, our blood pressure was high, adrenaline had dumped its into our systems, and we were ready for fight or for flight. Fight or flight. We're ready to react. However, there are some times when the brain doesn't know that there's danger. Ever see a toddler with hands outstretched, walking towards the stove and wanting to touch the hot stove? The parents have to teach it, right? Don't touch the hot stove. That will hurt you. That will burn you. Or what about the toddler that's just ambling down the driveway towards the busy residential street? Oh no, don't go out in the street. A car could kill you. Or what about parents that have to teach their kids, never go somewhere with a stranger? You see, sometimes our brains don't know what is dangerous, and we have to be taught what the dangers are. And then on the other hand, our brains can overreact to danger. Were you ever a kid and you thought, there's a monster under my bed? By the way, you know how to solve that, don't you? Just cut off the legs of your bed. Even when we're older, though, one fear can pile up on another fear, and after a while, it can overwhelm us just with normal fears in life. I mean, fear of failure, fear of global warming, fear of global cooling, fear of nuclear proliferation, fear of enemies in other countries, fear of rebellions, or even the news reports recently about the fiscal cliff. You heard about that? The fiscal cliff? It's our usual United States government budget. Happens every year, but some reason this year they're calling it the fiscal cliff. And you just hear that term and you get nervous. What's going to happen this year that's different than previous years? And some people say, well, it's different. And some people say it's not different. So we hear the news reports. I'm curious, how many of you have quit listening or watching news because it makes you fearful? Raise your hand. If you have quit, now look around you and notice a number of hands up. Some of us have opted out because it instills so much fear to us. Sometimes people react so strongly to fear around them, they can get an anxiety disorder. That's when your fear mechanism is flipped on and it never goes off. And you just have this fear in your body all the time. By the way, it can cause physical issues. It can cause people to have heart attacks. Remember a year and a half ago, I told you that my wife was diagnosed with a broken heart disorder? And you looked at Fred and said, what did you do? How did you break your wife's heart? And we had to explain that, in fact, it's a diagnosis, and that what my wife had done was kind of internalize the stress and the anxieties of life. And it was so internalized, it actually did physical things to her heart. By the way, she's not the only person in this congregation who has been diagnosed with that. Other people in the congregation have come to us and said, yep, gone through the same thing. By the way, lest you approach my wife after this service and say, how are you doing? She's doing just fine. It takes about a year to fully recover. And now she's doing just fine, but she's very careful with stress. Now, a few of us may struggle with chronic anxiety. And as a result, we might need to see a psychiatrist. We might need to have medicine prescribed for a while in order to deal with that, in order to help you cope. But that's rare instances. Most of us deal with something called stress. You ever tried to define stress? What is stress, actually? Well, I think a good definition of stress is it's a demand upon our spiritual, emotional, physical, and mental strength. For example, it is stressful to prepare a message for every Sunday morning. I mean, talk to me on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll say, I don't know quite what I'm going to say on Sunday. I'm a little stressed. I'm not sure I will have something to say on Sunday. By the way, for you, some of you would be saying, yeah, but I wouldn't even be found caught talking in front of anybody. Do you know what the number one fear that most people have? They found this out by surveys. It's fear of speaking in public. Do you know what the number two fear is? Fear of death. Think about that. That means you would rather be in the casket than speak at your own funeral. So we can look at stress and say, well, then I'd rather have a stress-free life. You know what a stress-free life is? You'd have to sit in your recliner all day. You'd have to not get out of bed in the morning. That's a stress-free life. Just lay there. Just sit there. Do nothing. You're not created for a stress-free life. Stress is normal. It is a good part of life. But we do have to acknowledge that some things stress us more than others. For example, what stresses me out may not stress you out. What stresses you out may not stress me out. And it's knowing what stresses you. And then if you know what stresses you, maybe you have to say no to some things in your life so you can say yes to other things. So if you say yes to something, there's only a limited amount of time and energy you have. Maybe you're going to have to say no to other things. But all of us need stress. Stress is good. Let me illustrate it this way. This violin is under stress. Or it should be, right? I mean, every string should be under stress. Now, I have to tell you, that string is not stressed. Can you hear it? No. No stress, no music. Now, what would happen if I tighten up that string? I mean, I just keep tightening. What's going to happen? It's going to break. That's not good either. What I'm saying is there has to be a balance. The string must be stressed enough to make a great note, but not stressed too far. In the same way with your life, you need to have stress, but not too much, not too little. Not if you're going to do beautiful things in this world. I've asked Tara, by the way, to show you what a good stressed out violin sounds like. Not stressed out, but perfectly stressed. Now, at the first service, Tara said, "Yeah, but this sort of thing stresses me out." And I said in reply, "It would stress me more if I had to play like that and you had to listen to me. No way." So, but you get the idea. Because the strings are under the proper stress, you hear beautiful music. In the same way, that's what we have to do with our lives. Now, how do we keep our strings from being overly stressed and breaking? Well, there are some things we can do. We can keep a Sabbath. One day out of seven off. Time to recharge, time to be renewed, time to do the things that bring vibrant life back into our life. Second thing we can do, don't take yourself so seriously. You know, it's helpful to laugh at yourself. And to realize that maybe you don't have to do it all. That somebody else could do it instead. And maybe you need to give up something so you can take on something different. Also, we know that exercise helps with stress physically. Also, we know that having a mentor, having a person that you can go to, a confidant, somebody that will not break a confidence, somebody that you really respect, that you can share your problems and your fears with, and that person will give you an objective viewpoint of what you're going through. I have to tell you, when I'm under tremendous stress and fearful, there are a couple mentors in my life that I go and talk to, and when I'm done talking with them and analyzing and working through things, I have to tell you, I feel so much better. And then the Bible has an answer for our stress. The Bible has a message that is mentioned over and over, and what it clearly says is, don't be afraid. Jesus, by the way, said this 25 times to his disciples. Don't be afraid. That's not great advice, but you're going, yeah, but give me reasons not to be afraid. Well, we have some. In the spring of 1945 at dawn, during World War II, an observer noticed a soldier who was very nervous pacing on the banks of the Rhine River in Germany as the troops were getting ready to go across. The observer went up to the soldier and said, "What's the matter, soldier?" And the soldier said, "Well, I guess I'm a little nervous." And the observer said, "Well, so am I. Why don't we walk together here by the river, and perhaps we will draw strength from each other?" The private did not know that the arm around his shoulder was that of General Eisenhower. When we're under stress and we are fearful, we want to know that somebody walks with us. And for Christians, God walks with us. That's one reason not to fear. Isaiah 41:10 says, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my victorious right hand." So don't be afraid. God is with you. God is as near as the air that you breathe. And yes, when you walk through floods and you walk through fires, God will be with you. And by the way, that acknowledges that God won't protect you from the difficulties. You will have to walk through those difficulties, but God is with you. God will suffer with you. God will cry with you. Remember how we talked about that last week? Some of you took God's tears with you and put them in your pocket as a reminder of the fact that God cries with you. Psalm 55, verse 2 says, "Cast your burden on the Lord, and he will sustain you." David of the Old Testament was living in difficult times. King Saul wanted to kill him. And David fled for his life out into the Philistine territory. That was the territory of his enemies. And when he fled into their territory, frankly, he was afraid that the Philistines would kill him because he was a Jew. Do you know what David did? He acted like he was crazy. He acted like he was nuts. And he did such a good job acting, they thought, well, this guy's not worth our efforts to kill. We'll just leave him alone. He's crazy. But do you know where David found strength in those difficult times? He knew that God was with him. He even wrote in Psalm 61, "O Most High, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you. In God whose word I praise, in God I trust. I am not afraid. What can flesh do to me? All day long they seek to injure my cause. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They stir up strife. They lurk. They watch my steps." Another helpful thing I find is when Jesus was fearful or worried or scared about the future, we know exactly what he did. He prayed. Remember the night before he was going to be crucified, he went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray? And how he said, "Father, let this cup pass from me." That cup, by the way, was the cup of suffering, cup of being crucified. But by the time he got to the end of his prayer, he said, "Not my will be done, but yours." You know, that's helpful for us to remember. When you are fearful, when you are worried, when you are scared, why not say, "God, not my will, but your will be done. I hand it over to you." I will tell you, there are many times when I've been afraid, I've been worried, and I'm not just talking bear stories. I'm talking about real things that happen to every one of us. And it's those times when I can come to God and say, "God, it's too much for me. It's up to you. I leave it in your hands." And I have to tell you, every time I do that, I find peace. I find comfort. In Philippians chapter 4, verses 5 through 7, it says, "The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ." Those were words written by the Apostle Paul. Paul, who was in prison. Paul, who was awaiting news of whether he would be freed or whether he would be executed. And yet he is able to write and pray and find peace in prison. Prayer is critical. Sometimes you don't need to say really long prayers to find strength. Often I find that just a little breath prayer will work. You know what I'm talking about with breath prayers? It's a little phrase. Maybe four or five words. Maybe you need to say them over and over. Phrases like, help me, God. I trust in you, Jesus. May your will be done. Or maybe, God, give me your peace. And you may have to say these breath prayers over and over. I had a church member this past week come to me and say, Fred, I had a nightmare this week. I woke up and that fear was just within me. And she said, I just couldn't go back to sleep. You know what I did? I prayed a breath prayer. I prayed one line over and over. And after I had done that for a while, I felt peace and calm and I was able to go back to sleep. Most of us know that during the civil rights days, Martin Luther King Jr. dealt with a lot of stress and fears. After all, there were many people who were out to kill him, and they did succeed at one point. We know the FBI was investigating him. We know that segregationists were blasting him with hate. We know that he was imprisoned. We know he was beaten at times. And he acknowledged that he knew he was at great risk because he was leading the civil rights movement. The night before he was killed in Memphis, he talked about the threats he had received, and he said this, "Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter now. Because I have been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would love to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen into the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people, we will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." Wouldn't you like to have the peace that Martin Luther King Jr. had in the face of all the fear and the anxiety and stress that surrounded him? Well, we can by speaking to God in prayer. We can by seeking God's will in the midst of uncertainty. We can by feeling God's presence with us. When we are standing in the dark, when we hear the growls of worry and anxiety and fear, and when we worry that something will charge into our lives and overrun our lives, we can stand courageously with the light of Christ to ward off those fears. Jesus said, "Do not fear. I will be with you always." Amen.